at that day. Along with her she took my heart.
Rain, please tell me now, does that seem fair? For her to steal my heart away when she don't care.
I can't love another when my heart's somewhere far away. The only girl I care about is gone away, looking for a brand new start. But little does she know that when she left that day, along with her she took my heart.
Wondrous. And it helps the flowers to grow, of course, as well. That's the important thing. The opening words filled in us from Richard Fitzwilliams when I shared the wondrous news that you were online were, and I'm maybe paraphrasing slightly here, oh, he'll want to discuss the royal baby, obviously. Isn't that right, Richard?
That is absolutely what I said, and I ought to have added, of course, that Phil will want me to tell him why it's so important Prince Charles succeeds as head of the Commonwealth. It's been a right royal week.
Are you ready for some right royal ramifications, Phil Leonis?
I've been looking forward to this ever since the news broke of the birth of the royal baby, especially because the news is always here so terrifying. And when they broke in on some of the terrifying news, whether it be gun violence or Donald Trump's latest tirade on Twitter with breaking news, I only feared the worst. And to actually get a bit of breaking good news was a quick ray of sunlight. So I've been looking forward to speaking with you about this ever since. So good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Phil. No, it's quite literally sunlight. I mean, one of our movies we're discussing is Let the Sun Shine In, and it certainly has. Firstly, with the Queen laying out the red carpet, whatever the politicians got up to, Theresa May's involvement in the fiasco over the Windrush immigrants, and subsequently, this is still continuing to be an absolute political minefield for the government, the way those who came to help Britain after the war from the Caribbean have been treated. Initially, the Prime Minister said she hadn't got time to meet with the 12 Caribbean Prime Ministers, and it would have been very interesting, remembering Peter Morgan's The Audience, which was a play about the Queen's links with her former prime ministers, these weekly audiences, what they might have said, because we don't know. It would have been very interesting to be a fly on the wall when May met HM during a week where the Queen put her seal, and this was subsequently agreed by the other Commonwealth prior heads of state. Well, in fact, the Queen is head of state of 16 Commonwealth nations. There are 5 other monarchies, the rest are republics, but the Queen is head of the Commonwealth. But the Queen recommended, all this had been arranged beforehand, of course, and there never was any other option, that Charles took over. You simply, when she eventually passes, you simply couldn't have a rotating head of state, a Republican presidency, as Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, ridiculously suggested, because it's in May, actually, that Syria becomes chairman of the United Nations Disarmament Forum in Geneva, which is absolutely ludicrous. The echoes of Idi Amin's presidency of the Organization of African Unity, because it was Uganda's turn in 1976. I mean, Sri Lanka hosted the Commonwealth conference in 2013 because it's an abysmal human rights record, and it's well worth remembering that 37 out of the 53 Commonwealth countries have homophobic legislation, which is utterly deplorable. But it is an important organization, and this there was splendor in the banquet and at the palace. Very interesting to see them all sitting round little round tables, which brings us to the royal baby, because, of course, King Arthur's round table was a monument to egalitarianism, certainly at the time, and it looks as though the royal baby's name, which will probably be announced today, is going to be Arthur. I mean, it really has been wonderful news. The 23rd was the date that most of the press thought the baby would be born on, and Kate duly obliged, and like Charlotte, it was an easy birth, and she looks, I know her stylist visits her in hospital, you know, before the appearance to the press, that photo call on the steps of the Lindo wing of St. Mary's Hospital. I mean, the first well-known royal to use the Lindo wing was Princess Anne, who gave birth to Peter Phillips in 1977, and then 4 years later, Sister Zara, who will in fact be giving birth in the summer. I mean, that will be the Queen's seventh great-grandchild. It's just amazing, but I did think one of the cutest image which went worldwide, and you will have seen this, was when William took George and Charlotte to visit their new sibling, and Charlotte's little wave, she's three on the 2nd of May, and that was absolutely, it was so wonderfully cute. So I hope these images, at a time of a really weird time, I hope these images gave you a lift and something to cheer about, and found them super.
Well, I found that even our journalists were surprisingly, I don't know if emotional is the right word, but genuinely joyous in talking about this story and in sharing the images, because they too apparently need a break. And so it in other times, perhaps we would have looked not down upon the news, but we would have tried to maintain some sort of distance from the news, because after all, we are no longer a colony. But it's amazing that not only did it bring back a certain amount of joy to the reporting, but it started to bring back other joyful stories of covering the royals from American journalists, and I found that to be quite, I don't know, refreshing.
It is, and also, mind you, I can assure you, it was nothing like the birth of George, where, in fact, you remember, reporters were camped outside for some 3 weeks. I mean, it really was something that was, was seismic. But then George, of course, will be king one day, whereas the new baby prince is going to be fifth in line to the throne and will have a role as a senior royal. But yes, it is something it's been very joyous. And also, the younger royals are so popular. We've of course got the royal wedding coming up, so much to do. And also the royal wedding, they various details are fed from week by week just to stir up excitement. That's one of the reasons they are naming the baby probably today. They couldn't yesterday. There's no precedent. I mean, its precedence for this simply doesn't matter, because the royals can handle it in their own way. I think it was something like a month before the Queen named Charles. But the point was, or is, that yesterday was Anzac Day, and I think it would have been considered disrespectful, and also the Prince of Wales was out of the country. So we're expecting Arthur. The bets are also a possibility for Albert. It's quite interesting, this. Had it been a girl, Victoria was rather high in the stakes, and to have Albert as well, it's quite interesting. I mean, the link, of course, is with the Queen's father, Albert George, known as Bertie, the Duke of York, who, of course, had the Stammen has been immortalized with the King's Speech, and so a younger generation knows something about him. But the real Albert, the Prince Consort, what interests me is the way, firstly, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee led us to look back at the Victoria's Diamond Jubilee when she was very frail, a 20-minute service outside St. Paul's. She was in her carriage. She couldn't leave it, but she enjoyed the trip around London. But people started to look a bit more at the Victorian era. There's been a television series, Victoria, which has done very well. Judi Dench, of course, in Mrs. Brown and Victoria and Abdul. And also, I mean, even the Pre-Raphaelites, the Victorian art was regarded as rubbish about 30 or 40 years ago. The famous story of Andrew Lloyd Webber, who was offered Lord Leighton's famous painting Flaming June for £60 in the 1960s. It's not apocryphal, apparently. It's true, but he couldn't raise it because his family wouldn't lend him the money. But anything Victorian was linked with poverty, was linked with imperialism and exploitation. But there was so much more to her as a person, and Victorian art was one of the great royal love stories. So it's rather interesting to see that that name is in contention. I think it'll be James, because James II got booted out in 1685, and it hasn't particularly happy connotations other than for the Scots, because James I of England was James VI of Scotland, of course, the son of Mary, Queen of Scots. And, of course, Philip, there is already the Duke, of course. I think that will be a middle name. Maybe Henry might be a middle name, and so on. But the reporters will have fun with that, and then we will move on to the wedding planning and looking forward to what is going to be, well, our first American princess, Phil, is it not? And normally, of course, we'd expect a representative of the American government there, but you see how well that's been handled.
And obviously, if you are a Republican listening to this, I apologise for the last 6 minutes of unashamed and unabashed eulogising on behalf of an era.
If you're a who? Could you explain that?
I'm just in the interest of balance here, gentlemen. Sometimes you just have to pull back slightly from the whole essence.
I ask, Phil, one question, though, because I couldn't resist having a look at this again, because it brought tears to my eyes. It was so beautifully done. You will know John Adams with Paul Giamatti, and there was this wonderful scene where Tom Holland plays the George III, and John Adams is the first American ambassador credited to the Court of St. James after the War of Independence, and the chemistry between the two men. I mean, it is so beautifully done and so wonderfully scripted. Didn't you think so? Do you remember?
Oh, I remember it quite well. I will be honest, though, that when that came out, I had only recently immersed myself in the actual John Adams letters. So I was reading his entire correspondence, and so I had my own kind of imaginings of the casting of John Adams that were not the same as what I was seeing on screen. But it was a marvelous piece of work, a marvelous work. But I encourage everyone to read, actually, the Adams letters. They're spectacular.
Richard, I'm going to put a pop quiz question to your good self here, which you may or may not know the answer to. I didn't know this myself until last Saturday. But what is the connection between the War of Independence and Scarborough, England?
Well, you're about to tell me. I don't know.
John Paul Jones, a man who was chucked out of the British Navy, effectively went over and became one of the leading lights of, obviously, the whole American naval corps and so on.
A legendary figure, because in a duel, I think it was with a British frigate, when he was supposed to have struck his colours, he made the famous phrase, "I think I'm right, I have not yet begun to fight." Am I right? Is that the one?
I believe so, and that's another reason why Phil Linus should make his way to Sci-Fi Scarborough next year.
Well, now, wait a second. You mean John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin?
Oh, whoa.
Oh.
Yeah, a left field one there, certainly. Let's move on to another shocking item of news, that last night on the programme, Richard, Phil actually said he had not heard of either of the movies that you're going to share with us today, including one about Isabel, a Parisian artist, a divorced mother who's looking for love, true love, at last.
I'm surprised, but I mean, it does show that there's a problem with art house movies and their release, because I mean, if one takes, say, the Israeli Foxtrot, which I saw and did very well been at festivals. I saw it at the London Film Festival, and it hasn't been released here. And this is obviously the fault of the distribution system. I mean, also the fact that in a film we've seen, most or a lot of the American movies before me. I would only hope that both these movies do come to cinemas where they're accessible to American audiences, because it's clearly the fault, the distribution system fault. But I have to say, when it comes to custody, I mean, recently I've been riveted by, but not quite as riveted by as a lot of other reviewers, a certain movie dealing with blind aliens who are hypersensitive to sound. But when you have a quiet place, when you have a quiet place and you have a certain amount of tension, yes, it's skilled, but it's pretty contrived. This custody, I mean, it had me. I have to make a confession here. And Phil will understand where I'm coming from, because I scare easily at movies. And when I'm particularly scared and can't watch on the screen, what I do is I put up my right hand and I look on the top right-hand corner. I did this during Psycho and The Omen and so forth. On the top right-hand corner of the screen, so I have a vague idea what's going on. And, of course, I can hear. Repulsion, though, when hands shut out of all parts of a wall really did scare me almost to death. I did it here. Now, I hadn't done this for, I think it's months, if not years. It's dramatic, it's powerfully made, it's directed by Javier Legrand. From the outset, where you have Antoine, played by Denis Ménochet, and Lea Drucker playing Miriam, their father seeks custody of a child, and it's perfectly obvious that he's monstrous. And from the very what's interesting about this movie is you can see the character of the father, and quite correctly you deduce you've got a somewhat unhinged, violent character. What's so clever, and I'm very careful of spoilers here, because there are aspects of this that will surprise, but equally it is, on the whole, a correct assessment. But it's nonetheless absolutely riveting, because the judge, a very fine performance, I would say, by Sacha Ben-Aleb, decides that it's only fair that there are two children, but the 12-year-old boy, Julien, played by Thomas Gloria, and terribly well, absolutely hates his father. But this testament that's read out from the son, the problem is the judge starts being sympathetic to the father. And what you're literally propelled into is a world of fear, because Miriam has a pretty good idea that this is going to be an absolute catastrophe. And also, what is psychologically riveting is the way that the father uses his legal rights. The daughter is overage, and it's the son, where he has co-custody, that he's therefore able to manipulate or attempt to manipulate the son to cause the maximum possible distress to Miriam, the mother, his former wife. The facts are also that she has a secret, and also what happens, how does this develop, and what about the... There's a physicality about Denis Ménochet, who plays Antoine, that's terrifying from the beginning of this film. You know that there are going to be unpredictable events, but they may well involve fearsome violence, and they also may link to the fact that he's so obviously somewhat unhinged, but he's got legal rights. And that is the indictment of the law, and also the use of just telling a story with a first-class script, with an absolutely flawless cast. Lea Drucker, absolutely superb. Denis Ménochet, you ought to get awards for playing Antoine, as he does. But also the fact that it is such a terrifying film, ultimately. And I was looking at a very small corner of the screen when a mother Julian are terrified, and what the camera does, instead of moving around, it holds an image for a very long length of time. And that was far more terrifying than anything in a quiet place for me. I really thought that this is a marvelous, it's a masterclass in terror. And it's about, of course, domestic violence, and it's superbly acted. And it is riveting.
Sounds like, sounds like toxic masculinity to me, Phil.
I cannot believe that this does not have American distribution, and yet all I can find is that it has played a few film festivals here. It's slated to play a few more, but there is no release yet planned or announced. So it's surprising, but I will keep my eyes peeled. I have good news to report about the next film you're going to discuss by the peerless Claire Denis. And of course, for my money, I sort of wish every movie starred Juliette Binoche, but it comes out on Friday here in the United States.
Have a chance to find out what a delightful movie this is. It is priceless comedy with Juliette Binoche as Isabelle, a neurotic artist who falls in and out of love with practically everybody she meets, and very, very entertaining from the opening scene. It's a graphic sex scene where Javier Beauvoir, playing the businessman Vincent, having trouble having sex. I have to say that it's a hilarious scene, and she starts weeping when he says something that distresses her, and this sets the tone for a great deal of this movie, where she will meet man after man, including a wonderful performance by Nicolas Duvanchel. I haven't heard of him, but I was very entertained. He's simply known as the actor, and my goodness me, he's lost in his own ego. He's decided to leave his wife, although she doesn't know it, and he treats Isabelle as dalliance. How serious is he? She's serious. She's always serious. She's so neurotic she can't help herself, and as a result, the dialogue between them, which is a collection of nonsenses, their platitudes, it is absolutely hilarious. I was very, very amused by every man who appears in this movie. She will in some way fling herself at or listen to. There is a confidant played by Bruno Paldades, an admirer, Fabrice, who loves to discuss her affairs and offers her advice. But the funniest part of this movie, and I won't tell you when he appears, is Gérard Depardieu playing a medium. It's worth seeing just for that. But if you want an enigmatic, neurotic artist who's also rather fascinating, Juliette Binoche. I mean, it's a relatively light-hearted movie, and I have to say I'm not looking for profound insights into it, but it's got the Parisian backdrop, and it's, well, set in the City of Love. Love certainly doesn't go well here. You could say it's a very entertaining froth, but Binoche is a wonderful performer. I've always liked her. I don't think she's ever given a bad performance, something you couldn't say of so many, and since Depardieu's part in it, I mean, I was absolutely roaring with laughter. Really, I was. I mean, these the male characters have personalities that are you can link with quite a lot of characters in some cases that you know, an egotistical actor, a businessman whose ego is positively Olympian, who's married and treats Isabelle as somebody finds of use, and the way she treats him is very funny. This is a movie that thoroughly entertained me. Claire Denis is indeed superb, and I think you'll find it most diverting.
Well, I just love that Juliette Binoche, she gets better and better, and may I say, more and more beautiful all the time as well. I am surprised about the casting of Gérard Depardieu as a medium, and you're gonna like this, Alex. I'm surprised that he would be cast as a medium. Certainly, he should be cast as an extra large.
Yeah, I knew where you were going with that one, Phil. And I just thought, it's superb. It's the stand-up comedian in you, Phil. It's wonderful.
I must also ask, but if he remembers Welcome to New York.
And you are, most definitely. Welcome to New York.
I
know, it's okay. We're just riffing on the whole thing. I'm looking forward to, obviously, the Hollywood remake of Custody when it actually translates the whole foreign nature and rebrands it and repackages it in a way. That's probably why they don't want to have a major
remake. For example, I mean, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, it was very well remade. I mean, there's a remake with the right director and cast should be excellent,
exactly.
But there's something they can learn from really
adaptation. And that, Phil Lynas, is why Richard Fitzwilliams is clearly holding off on Avengers Infinity War for at least one more week.
I felt about the Juliette Binoche movie Clouds of Sils Maria the way that most people feel about Avengers. That was my Avengers movie.
Tell me why. Now, I must hear this. I really must.
I don't know. I felt about that movie the way most people feel about these big spectacle action movies.
It's one of my favorite movies.
It completely absorbs me. I believe everything that I'm seeing. I never sense a false note, and I find truly the performance by especially the two women in that movie to be super heroic.
Oh, they were, and in fact, I see you were equating it with the absolute adoration that the younger generation give to all these
bedazzled, bedazzling.
I was also bedazzled by The Crowds of Sils Maria to the extent where I bought a copy and have just seen it again.
Whoa.
I absolutely endorse every word Phyllis said.
A film star comes face to face with an uncomfortable reflection of herself while starring in a revival of the play that launched her career. It's got Kristen Stewart in as well, in that's almost as good as when she actually was in Snow White and the Huntsman. Again, unmitigated wonder.
Binoche's assistant, it's a beautifully played role. And also the way Binoche captures the moods of her character and the fear when she's got to tread the boards, but not it's in the same play, but it's not the same role.
Richard, in Los Angeles, it's 18 minutes to 1 o'clock in the morning. Some people have to get some sleep. I'm aware of that. I mean, unless he wants to stick around for the whole show, that's fine. But Richard, I need to ask Phil to put those last two questions to you after we've had a mega exciting special, which has obviously featured on two foreign language movies, both French. C'est merveilleux. Of course, the royal situation. Richard, Phil, would you like to put those last two questions to Monsieur Fitzwilliams, please?
Well, and not to mention, I think virtually an entire TED Talk of political history as well, Richard delivered to us during this segment. All of that on one episode of the Midweek Drive. Richard, did you enjoy your telephonic link with us this morning?
I more than enjoyed it. I absolutely loved it. It was wonderful connecting.
And can we look forward to speaking with your good self again, perhaps a week hence?
I hope so, and it'd be wonderful to speak with you then, because we'll also have some more royal news, and we've also got the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
I tell you what, Richard, shall I send you the link of the book of the month we did apropos of the Guernsey Literary Potato Peel Society when we predicted it was going to go movie-wide about 6 years ago? Yeah, exactly. Because Richard also liked the joyous entry that Holly and her team put together for this year's 48-hour film festival challenge as well. So it all fits into place. Give a full review on that. You can listen again next week. Phil, are you heading off to the land of Nod now, or heading to the arms of Morpheus? Or do you want to say, well, what the hey? I might as well go until 1 o'clock.
If you mean by the arms of Morpheus, am I going to put on the Blu-ray of The Matrix and enjoy Lawrence Fishburne? Of course I am. I do need to go get some work done before I can go to slumber.
Well,
yes.
We'll see you next week, Phil, for your usual slots, Wednesday and Thursday. Take care, keep on keeping on, and be happy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Richard. Bye-bye, Phil. Don't So make the most of it whilst it's here. As for Lena said in his weather forecast earlier, sunshine on a rainy day. Somebody who always brings us sunshine on any kind of day, rainy, foggy or otherwise, has to be the awesome Lee Lennox. Isn't that right, Ian?
I certainly hope so.
Marvellous. And how are Ollie and Obo, your famous associate companions and feline friends?
They're out on the town tonight or this morning. I don't know where they are.
Oh, OK, interesting.
Well, Ollie had his breakfast and he disappeared, but Obo's just... Well, come back in, I think.
As you know, Ian, I spend an awful lot of my time considering and contemplating the excitement and wonderment of that awesome owner, Mike Ashley, because I know ultimately, as a Newcastle fan and supporter, you're a big, big, big fan of Mike Ashley. And from that perspective, can I just utter a few words today? Have you ever considered a possible job swap with Ellis Short? Because surely when it comes to ownerships, then Ellis would be a fantastic sort of addition and maybe could be an Ashley successor, do you think? I mean, maybe they could actually swap roles, do you think?
I think I'd probably prefer the one that you've got as Man City.
It's really? You're more a Sheikh Mansour person, are you?
There's a rumour, actually. He at one stage was considering Newcastle United.
Well,
that would have been good, wouldn't it?
Amanda Staveley.
Because Man City would have just got where they are now anyway without them, wouldn't they?
I think so. In terms of general sort of possibility. I mean, obviously, the Guardiola mix and all the other factors have demonstrated that. But, so you're basically giving that short shrift to the notion that allowing for the fact that former Hull City owner Adam Pearson has basically stated he's no longer interested in buying Sunderland, that you wouldn't necessarily want Ellis Short to effectively have an interest in Newcastle.
No.
I
don't think he would want an interest in Newcastle anyway. I think he's had a bit of a bad time at Sunderland, hasn't he?
Yeah,
I think, seeing buying Sunderland, aren't they up for free?
You take all the debt or something, which is about
$60 million.
This is the other suggestion I was going to put forward to maybe yourself and Arthur McKenzie getting a kind of consortium together to sort that thing through.
When Arthur writes another film, I think we'll probably consider it.
Yeah, it's good. Anyway, that's just one of the lines. And don't forget, when it comes to supporting Sunderland, as indeed Kaylee Carr actually does, support Kaylee because she's running the 10K marathon in Sunderland, and Sunderland folk need all the help you can get these days. That's all I will say. Moving on, because we have to. Let's progress to your thoughts and views on the royal baby. I mean, is it? Because I mean, we had an extensive discussion with Richard Fitzwilliams earlier, who believes that Arthur actually is the likely name for the child. Now, Ian, do you care? Is it a case of... Exactly.
No.
This was the sort of counterbalance I was putting together because there was the suggestion that this was, you know, so sensational, so wonderful that we wanted to camp out, etc. I thought, much as we appreciate the good work that they actually do, ultimately, does it really affect us in the North East?
No. I quite agree with that, actually. I don't like a lot of these people who pretend that the head royals do nothing because the queens work very hard. And doesn't have a good in the world, I think. And she's certainly done a lot for the prestige of this country throughout the world. But let's face it, if we're sitting down and inventing or trying to form a system of government for modern day Britain, we wouldn't have a royalty, would we? We're just they're just there and they're liked, and I think they're in their keep. I think because they do a lot. The Queen in particular has done so much good for Britain, as have the two princes, especially Harry. I think he's when he went to war, and you know, put himself on the line. If you look at the way Harry's performed at the time of a sort of military crisis, and you look at the way just about every American president has performed during the '60s, when not one of them, I don't think, ever got to anywhere near Vietnam. They had the most extraordinary array of injuries and things, didn't they?
Well, it was the war.
That's just my way of thinking about it. But anyway, I quite like some of the people in the royal family. I think as people, you know.
And they speak very highly of you as well, Ian.
I know they do.
It's one of those areas where, you know.
They never think when I roll around the world that there's a time gap, you know, and I get in the middle of the night.
It's always going to be one of those lines whereby I'm sure it'll be Arise, Sir Ian. You know, Sir Ian of Ponteland, I feel, would be a lovely
Alex, I think on my wonky knees, I don't think I'll be arising.
Well,
they'll give me a couple of pulleys to. That was about when I made it.
Anyway, before we actually invite you to actually have a listen, because we haven't actually had this little feature for quite some time.
I think it's an
artist called Nick Byrne, who's recently sort of emerged, and he's come out with a fairly melancholic little tune. So I warn you that this could actually just be, it's not a mood breaker, it's not a buzzkill, to use that wonderful phrase, but I think it's an interesting line. Are you ready to cast your critical ear over Nick Byrne and Birch Tree?
Yes. Had a very narrow range, didn't it? I don't know what range of notes it went through, but it seemed very, well, not flat, but it was very calm and even all the way through. And I think that's very difficult to sustain. So I found my mind drifting a little bit.
There we are. That might have been that might have been the intention of the writer. Nice chap. Wonderful soul, and I'm sure we'll hear more from Nick Byrne, Birch Tree. That's a little number, though. I'll leave it there. We'll park that moment in time and actually just let it sit in a kind of wonderful momentum of mellifluousness to actually just work our way through that. Ian, are you able to stay with us after the news?
Yes, sure.
Good, because I want to talk to you about bills and how British people actually cope with bills, and how in many ways it would seem that nearly a third of us confess that effectively they'd rather watch a DVD box set than actually open their bills. It's not good. Anyway, we'll talk about how you can actually be glued to paper as well as far as bills are concerned, and more. So we'll get sage advice from Ian Lennox if not sage, then at least some onion. One of those two things will actually occur here on Siren Radio as we begin to head off to the news with Marshmallow and Anne-Marie and Friends.